the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And holding here for 4 minutes and 20 seconds is Susie, Occupy Earth, as she's known. Susie, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Vinnie.
Hey, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you woke up and became an activist and a little bit about what you do.
It's pretty strange for me to be described as an activist because 6 months ago I certainly wasn't an activist. I was just a young mum at home with two kids, and I didn't really feel that I chose a life of activism. Really, the corporate mainstream media has forced me into a position where I've been made an information activist just by sharing the information that I came across, which was not being put on the news at 6 p.m. every night.
Yep. I can relate to that.
For me, it was witnessing live streams on the internet that started my interest in political activism. I was one of the people fortunate enough to see the Tim Pool and Luke Rakowski early Occupy Wall Street live streams in New York. And so I witnessed a lot of events online, and they were really significant events. I was watching, you know, thousands of people pour into one police plaza in New York City and protest at the police brutality against Occupy Wall Street. And at that stage in New Zealand, Occupy Wall Street hadn't been acknowledged by the media at all. There was, in fact, a three-week blackout from the beginning of Occupy Wall Street where none of the corporate media, the newspapers, the radio stations, the TV shows, would even acknowledge the existence of it, let alone report on it accurately. And so I just started to share...
Was it a conspiracy theory to them, was it?
I'm not sure if it's a conspiracy theory. I mean, there were, tens of thousands of people marching, across the Brooklyn Bridge and whatnot. These huge, major events happening, and there was just absolutely no coverage of it at all. I don't think that can be called a conspiracy theory. It's factual. I mean, I was sharing things on Facebook and Twitter on a daily basis that my friends and family were looking at and going, wow, this is major. And then they're turning on the news at 6 p.m. and not one word is being uttered about it. We saw people all over the world copying in the live stream links directly to their Twitter and Facebook accounts of major news corporations. They were going to ABC, to CNN, to Reuters. So it's not that they weren't aware of what was happening. It was just that for whatever reason, it wasn't making it through the editor process to actually be broadcast as fact on the news.
Well, there's quite a lot of documented evidence of intelligence agencies being involved at the helm of news organizations, in fact, recruiting newscasters, things like that. Even Walter Cronkite later was found to be in the CIA's Operation Mockingbird, which was to plant CIA information into the mainstream media and also to gain control of the mainstream media for the purposes of course, just controlling what information people get to hear and see.
Well, I think at this in this day and age, it's a situation of the news monopolies, and that only a very few corporations are owning all of these outlets, hundreds and thousands of news outlets, all with a single ownership. And I'd say that's how the information is able to be blockaded and actually prevented from public access. We're just really lucky that the internet has changed that and live stream has changed that. It used to be that if an event occurred, it was only those there who would really be able to give testimony as to what happened. But now with the live streams, when you have 60,000 people worldwide watching a live stream channel, that's 60,000 witnesses. That's 60,000 people who can tell you exactly what they saw and who are then naturally passing that information on to their family and friends. And that's why I say I don't really consider myself to be an activist. I was just someone who came across information that was not publicly available and told everyone that they knew about it because it's so obviously in the public interest.
Yeah, it certainly is. And, of course, if you're talking about a group of people like the media or anything, cause in general, I've talked to a lot of media people and they're just airheads, basically.
They have the Ken and Barbie $250,000 a year to sit on the screen looking pretty and say whatever they've been told to say by whoever's written it. And obviously whoever's written it is overseen by those editors who are dictating what content can and can't make it on or what slant is given to it. And I think that was the final nail in the coffin for me, was that after 3 weeks of seeing this complete media blackout about Occupy Wall Street, all of a sudden they began to report on it, and every single outlet had the same stance, the same angle, the same agenda. And that, for me, just really cemented it. And I am very angry and resentful towards the media for all of the hours of my life that were consumed by using their products, only to now discover at the age of 31 that all of those hours were to waste. And the now when I've done a lot of media comparison work over the last few months of seeing now what media they're putting out, analyzing it and putting it up against the truth from the live stream. And it's really, the disparity is significant, and the depth of the bias is really significant. And it's not until you have both sides to compare that you really understand it. Just growing up in consumer culture and taking for granted that the news will tell you if something big is happening, you don't notice the bias as much because you don't have that source for comparison. But the live streams are giving us that. They're giving us the truth on the ground, unedited, no post-production, nothing, just the raw truth.
Although, I must say that a nice edited video that flows together well from all the footage that was taken on the day can usually work pretty well also, and you don't have to watch it for quite as long.
If that's done in good conscience, then absolutely. But the Brooklyn Bridge incident taught me something very serious. I'm talking about the very first Brooklyn Bridge march where 600-odd protesters were arrested. Now, what I saw on that day was, from watching the live stream, I saw the sequential order of events. And you could see that the police actually led the protesters onto the bridge. They actually told them, this is the way we want you to go. And then they sealed the bridge off and they just mass arrested the protesters. Now, the NYPD released video footage montage of the events of that day. I actually published it on Occupy Savvy. It's now been removed from YouTube by, of all people, Fox News. The NYPD version of events spliced the footage and then put it in non-time sequential order. So they gave this completely different view of what had happened just by the editing process. So that's why I say if you do it in good conscience, if you're actually showing sequential events, that's fine. Can be really powerful.
I don't do that in my videos at all. I just do it with the direct opposite bias. I make the police look bad and the protesters look completely innocent.
Well, when you have the police running around with weapons and using them against people with no weapons, to be honest, it's not that difficult to make them look bad.
I mean, there's no hyperbole that you can utter about the police that isn't, you know, that isn't outdone by what the police have already done, you know. I mean, come on. They've been caught smuggling drugs. They've been caught murdering people. They've been caught raping and all this kind of stuff. There's awful stuff that happens with a very small number of police, okay? But, you know, when it comes to protesting, all of that sort of stuff, how many people have been killed in a protest in New Zealand? Do you know? Like, none?
Touch wood, that there won't be too many. But with the US Marines over here training our cops to use beanbag shotguns, I don't have that much hope for the future, to be honest.
We're going to get beanbagged to death, are we? I mean, seriously, we're living in a time now where a beanie baby is now considered a threat.
Well, unfortunately, that was what Scott Olsen was hit with in Oakland, and it's resulted in permanent brain damage and all kinds of other horrific injuries. So it sounds like, you know, a beanbag doesn't sound too dangerous. And what do they call it? They call it non-lethal weaponry, right? But it doesn't necessarily have to be lethal to destroy your life.
Well, you know, and the technical term should be less lethal weaponry. They're not as likely to kill you, but they can.
I think it should be possibly lethal. I would call it possibly lethal weaponry.
Yeah, I mean, I might be allergic to buckshot for all you know. it's just crazy, basically. I found that if you want to take control of something, unless the something is willing and is able to give itself up, you're going to have to absorb a lot of energy and a lot of time and effort into just maintaining control of it. You know, and that's what I think society has now become to. is spending so much time, so much effort, and so much energy containing the problem of people waking up that even more people are waking up because their resources are elsewhere.
You even now have police officers waking up. I mean, classic example would be the evictions here of Occupy Auckland, January 23rd and January 26th, 2012, they occurred. And the police official line was, oh, no, we were just there overseeing, you know, it was the council security guards that did it. It wasn't actually us. But when you're standing in the Auckland Council car park and it is filled with paddy wagons and 30-odd police officers and an inspector, Taylor, there, I think it was, directing them all, it certainly didn't seem like the police had a hands-off position. And essentially, we felt really betrayed by that eviction, not only because we had an appeal pending in court, but because we had had a really good rapport with the city cops. And so our initial reaction, and I think you see it in the Facebook postings from the first eviction of January 23rd, you see us saying the traitor cops and we've been betrayed by the cops. And the background to that was that the police had actually put a submission into the court saying that their handling of us was by the book, that the police manual on their regulations for police protest policing, that those regulations were what was guiding their stance on Occupy, which had been pretty tolerant for that four-month period or three-month period. And so we felt so betrayed that these cops who'd gone on record as supporting us were there evicting us until we discovered that actually it wasn't those cops there at all. And what had happened is the inspector, who had put in the submission to court about why they were, you know, their tolerant stance on policing was being enacted, he was actually away on holiday. And so what the remaining hierarchy not only was he away on holiday, but get this, the police hierarchy did not send the Central Auckland cops in to evict Occupy Auckland, and this is something not many people realise. What they did was ship South Auckland cops into the
I saw the county's Manukau paddy wagon down there. I've seen it on a couple of occasions when they've been arresting people.
Exactly. And that, to me, it shows that they knew they were being underhanded. Because if it was all above board and legal, why wouldn't they have used the cops who worked in that jurisdiction who had a four-month relationship with Occupy Auckland?
That explains why one of the guys there who was who's now a little bit more higher ranking than when I last saw him, he was the one commenting to the media. And I asked him about that particular agreement that the police had filed in court about supporting the Occupy protests and having the tolerant policing, the guys away on holiday and that kind of stuff. Instantly, and we're surrounded by media. Okay. Instantly, he stops the press conference and walks away.
Because what essentially happened is certain members of the police hierarchy have essentially betrayed other members of the police hierarchy, and they've come out looking like complete hypocrites.
Maybe there's some kind of power struggle going on inside the police, or maybe somebody higher up kind of pulled some strings, maybe.
Well, I think it was driven by politics. You had George Wood, sitting councillor of the Auckland Council, not only sitting councillor, but he actually is chairman of the Community Safety Board. And he was relentlessly trolling us on our Facebook page. He had other self-admitted friends of his making essentially terroristic threats against unarmed, non-violent protesters, saying that we should be shot with water cannons, that we should be they should bring the Dobermans in, the Rottweilers, all these ridiculous comments. And they were saying this at the same time as the police were official line was that they were following the police manual. So it was pretty apparent that there were political forces that wanted us to be mistreated, and the sooner the better.
And what's the connection to Counties Monaco? Len Brown, the super mayor. Is that who ordered this, I think? This is just pure speculation on my part that the mayor of Auckland City decided that it was a good idea to evict the occupiers using his old boys from down Monaco City. Now, I've been at evictions in Monaco City, and that same guy who was illegally trespassing on private land and demolishing a building and arresting several people and applying force onto a guy who just recently had surgery on his stomach as he'd been crying out and screaming out and yet continued to have his hand put around behind him and his knee jabbed into his back and his belly driven into the gravel and dirt. That guy who did that, who was in charge that day, also was the spokesperson. And this happened in Counties Manukau, by the way, was also that same spokesperson for the media when they turned up to the evictions. That same guy, and I know him because I've seen him a couple of times. I'm not sure if he recognizes me yet because every time I see him in the street enforcing the law or something like that, I even saw him on New Year's Eve, the poor bugger, downtown Queen Street, mate. He was just as big of a douchebag to me then as he was the first time I saw him. And now, of course, they've been roped in an underhanded, scumbaggery way to come in and bust all the occupiers, eh? Nice! Susie, you're back.
Yeah, well, see, yet again, we've got this police denial of involvement saying, oh, it's actually just the council's private security guards and we're there just to overlook it. Then why were there members of the police force with fake...
Well, we'll get into more of that after the break. Sorry, Susie. There were police with fake badge numbers. I think there was as many as two or three officers wearing the exact same badge number. And that was even reported in the mainstream news. So there was some dodgy stuff going down, ladies and gentlemen. More about Occupy after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com.
But I've never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles. But I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not
credible, so gentlemen,
until I can say I'm credible, I'll say
the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Hey, and by the way, if you haven't gone to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, like if you're listening to this on the free broadcast and stuff like that we have all over the place, go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, okay? Just go there, all right? And then once you're there, just wait. Don't click anything. Just wait and watch, because every single show that comes up on that top band there is an amazing radio show host. You know, people like Christopher Green, former banker from Wall Street and all that kind of stuff. Freda X has been a member of like 9 different secret societies or something like that, knighted in all kinds of occult ceremonies. We've got Mel Fabregas from the Veritas show. We've got Kerry Cassidy. We've got the Truth of Girls. We've got Casper Leach, Time for Hemp. It's and there's who else we got? Sean David Morton, John Zaskoda. Oh my God. So many amazing show hosts all on the one network. Why are not more people listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com? I'm telling you, go there. Something will pique your interest. Something will suit your taste. We've got a show for everybody. All right, now, Susie, had a comment in the chat room here that it was the CEO, Doogie, she calls him, who ordered it, not Len Brown, that Len Brown was actually for the protesters. Any info on that?
I certainly wouldn't call him for the protesters. I mean, unless you can show me a press release where he says he's in support of the protesters. I think that no one really knows. I think that Doug McKay plays the council head of security role despite the fact that he earns $750,000 a year. You saw him in the last week on amateur video restricting public access to a public council meeting. That same video showed another council member, Kathy Casey, I think it was, actually openly appealing to him, saying, why is the public being prevented from attending this public meeting? And there was good old Doug McKay, you know, standing hands on hips, physically preventing anyone from coming in. And so I think Doug McKay is definitely complicit, but no one will really even know, you know, outside of the council hierarchy, who it was that gave the orders. But it was just the hypocrisy of the police line of being so reasonable and doing it by the book, and then having this eviction occur while our appeal was still pending, and having them ship in cops from South Auckland and having other cops with this fake badge number, Z557, I believe it was. And you see the police statement from that day coming out saying, oh, that's terrible that these, you know, some rogue officers have done this and there'll be an investigation, but we certainly haven't heard a single word since then about the outcome of any such investigation.
The fact that we don't know who ordered it raises massive red flags in and of itself. If you don't know who ordered it, there's no accountability. If there's no accountability, it means you've got criminals running your city.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the Freedom of Information Act request that got put in for transparency of the council expenses of the eviction showed up all kinds of interesting things. It showed up that the actual cost of grass replacement was like, what, 10% of what they told the court it was going to be and what they'd been telling the public for months it was going to be. It showed the horrific expense of legal fees. Instead of using their own council lawyers, they chose to get a council prosecutor that cost them, what, $300,000, was it? $200,000 or $300,000 for a couple of court hearings? That was just completely superfluous expenditure. There's no way that they needed to do that. They had an entire legal team in-house that could have done the work itself. The fact that that prosecutor who they hired also was the prosecutor against the Uruwera for the illegal police surveillance. And of all prosecutors, they choose him to prosecute Occupy Auckland?
Oh, what a tangled web we weave. A tangled web.
Other things that came to light too was that the council had spent ratepayers' money on private investigators to investigate key members of Occupy Auckland. I mean, suspicious bunch that we are, stay-at-home mums and whatnot. Apparently we needed to be investigated, and the crowd that they got, that they outsourced it to, was TCIL, which was, I believe, Thompson and Clark Investigations Limited, who have apparently made an entire career for themselves out of investigating people based on their political opinions, as the name of their company has come up time and time again with regards to activism throughout New Zealand.
Yeah, it reminds me of that scene in the movie Watchmen, where he talks about, well, free is just another word for socialist. I think we might have to have an investigation into any past communist affiliations you might have had. You know?
Oh, well, admin.
It's like this kind of neo-McCarthyism coming up here.
As an admin of the Facebook page, we collectively, the admins of the Facebook page, have attracted a bit of attention. And personally, I find it hilarious that there would have been any surveillance on me across that period, because all they would have heard is, you know, me changing nappies and singing She Hard in my car on the way to the GA. There's just absolutely no basis to be investigating us. And they're wasting tens of thousands of taxpayers' dollars, you know, if not more, to do
hundreds
stuff.
Hundreds of thousands. You know, when you think about it in the aggregate, okay, here's the deal. You've got a bunch of people who are occupying a public space. How much is it going to cost you to remove them and clean up that space again? Would you think $300,000? No, you wouldn't, would you? You'd think maybe, I don't know, $10,000-$20,000, maybe, if that.
Well, ironically,
incidentally, that's exactly the cost of what the fences and all of that kind of stuff would be, you know, just to allow the grass to grow back and prevent people from walking on it.
The fences are interesting, because I was told that it's actually illegal for the council to fence off public space from the public, and yet that's precisely what they did, and they left them there for weeks.
Yeah, because that grass is going to grow back, eh?
Well, we actually put grass seed down on the grass, and by the time the council contractors showed up, the grass had grown back.
But, of course, the council contractors still got their $20,000 or something, right?
Of course.
Or was it $30,000?
To be honest, I don't have the figures in front of me, but it was just a ludicrous expenditure for having some tents on some grass. It was just ridiculous.
Look, this is how we have to solve this problem. And I think Penny Bright's had it on the money the whole time. Cut out the contractors, okay? If you don't have no contractors, you don't have the capacity for private corporations to get control over the expenditure of the council through the contracts that they issue. And that's basically what's going on down here. I mean, up until recently, they didn't even have to publish the term, the scope, or the value of contracts issued by council until, again, Penny Bright kind of got out there and got arrested something like 20 times in council chambers in order to get it. I've been thrown out of council too. Now, Auckland City Council is a very dangerous place to speak the truth, I found.
If you're given the opportunity to do so at all, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and well, the thing is, you actually have now, and this is what Penny and Lisa Prager have been telling me for years, you don't ask them for permission anymore. You tell them that I'm coming in and I'm filming this council meeting. I'm coming in and I'm going to speak at the council meeting because that's one of your rights, essentially. Member of the public can.
Well, right? Technically it's your right, but in practice, I mean, when we had the march at the town hall that where we established 2.0 on Queen Street, which was the second occupation to be established here in Auckland, they locked down the town hall, and I mean literally with... literally locked it down with huge padlocks and tons of security. And that was in the middle of the day. So anyone in Auckland who was trying to go there to do any business whatsoever or to, you know, do whatever they had to do there did not have the opportunity to enter the city, our town hall.
Well, that's unfortunate for democracy, isn't it? I remember one time when we were locked out of council for a council meeting because... This is the interesting thing. Most of the Citizens and Ratepayers Party on the City Council, which were the dominant, you know, contractors and all of that kind of scumbaggery that we've come to know in the council since forever, most of them were away on holiday. So they wouldn't have a majority when it came to voting on any council issues. And it was 1 week before submissions on the Super City, where 26 whatever billion dollars worth of public assets were about to be put into private hands under the Super City model. And you know what their excuse for cancelling a council meeting, which has never happened before, never, in 15 years that we've had that the councillors were there, in 15 years they'd never seen a council meeting cancelled for anything. You know the reason they said? There was not enough to talk about.
There's not enough that they wanted to talk about and too much that they didn't want to talk about. Absolutely. But like the media, see, really, isn't it?
This is why you got to get in these people's face. You know, the gauntlet has to be thrown down at one point once scumbaggery has become obvious and being committed blatantly in a wanton way.
The thing that's the most upsetting to me is the sheer amount of resources that have been pitched against the success of the Occupy movement. And I think that people really underestimate that. They underestimate the depths of depravity involved as well and the lengths that these people are prepared to go to. Because doing things like hiring a private investigation firm on public dollars, like, that's fine and good because we can get a Freedom of Information Act request and know that's happening. But I can tell you now that there's far more than that that is happening that does just get written off as conspiracy theory. I mean, a few months ago, if we'd said, oh, our admins are being followed by a private investigations firm, we'd get told that we're conspiracy theorists. Now we're sitting here with the invoices.
Hey, well, it just goes to show you, even if you don't think that anybody's following you, you know, that's the whole tenet of paranoia, isn't it? Just because you're paranoid doesn't mean people aren't following you.
When the lesson I've learned about paranoia with Occupy and my involvement in it is that you just assume that your worst fears are true and then get on with the job. because it's wasted time sitting around thinking, is this happening, is this happening? We did know people were following us. We did know our lines were tapped. We didn't make too much of a song and dance about it at the time because we were waiting until, you know, it actually eventually came to light that that's what was happening. And sure enough, here it is. It's come to light that that's what was happening. But it does make you think twice about when other people are denounced as conspiracy theorists. You've got to wonder, really, what is going on, because it's not likely to be what the mainstream's telling you.
Yeah. Well, I've come up with that new definition for conspiracy theorist. It's a person who believes that there's powerful people who have a lot of influence who use their power to gain more influence.
That's pretty much it in a nutshell.
And a coincidence. And on the other side of the spectrum, you have a coincidence theorist who thinks that everything happens by sheer coincidence. It's all accidental. There's no such thing as a backroom deal or people talking to each other. Everything magically happens.
I think people naturally play the devil's advocate. They see something funny or strange and they go, oh, there must be an explanation for that, or, you know, that can't really be what's happening, or that's not really what's going on. I think that's our natural inclination. And also because you do want to think the best about even the politicians and the council. You don't want to think, oh, the council would put, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars into investigating some, you know, members of the public who are politically active. But sadly, that seems to be exactly what's been happening. And the surveillance in New Zealand, too, it's now so widespread. It's not an issue of, like, police going and getting a warrant and, like, doing an investigation and then it all coming out in court. The vast majority of the surveillance that's undertaken is never going to be aired in a courtroom. And by that, I'm talking about cell phone technologies. I'm talking about lawful interception, I think, is the term that the companies that do this like to use. We had it outed by the Anonymous Worldwide Group a few months ago that there is a corporation in Wellington, New Zealand, called SSI Corp. And you can Google them and you can look at their website. And on their website, they're so good as to explain at length exactly what they do and how legal it is for them to do it. And essentially, they can intercept virtually any communication, be it, you know, if they have someone at range, they can hear your actual conversations, but also through cell phones, they can essentially turn them into microphones and hear any conversation that's had within vicinity. They can see your text messages. They can see what photos are on your phone. They can see what files are on your phone. They can read your emails. They can just intercept all kinds of information. And this is, the use of it is really widespread. And the fact that these are private corporations that are doing it should be really concerning to us, because it's not even a matter of surveillance by the state. The state is contracting a private company to surveil you. And to me, that's really immoral. Absolutely immoral.
And goodness knows what kind of training or hoops that person has had to jump through before they actually get to be in the position where they can just surveil people, you know, without warrants or wiretap or anything like that.
It's just amazing to me that you can pay money to obtain people's personal information, because that's essentially what it is. You can go to a surveillance corporation and pay them money to gain information that you shouldn't have access to.
Well, it just goes to show you don't really have anywhere you can hide. So why bother? Just assume the worst and get on with it, as you said, Susie. I think that's quite reasonable. All right, well, hold on after the break there, and we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.
I got some so-called friends. My right to my face, all when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh no, no. Oh no, no. There's only one thing I need to know. Whose side are you on? I'm flying a JFK. My heart goes boom, boom, boom. I know that customs man.
Welcome back.
He's gonna take me to that.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about appreciating the TSA. Vinny Eastwood Show. A little bit of groping never hurt anybody, neither did microwave radiation. Now, definition of fascism allegedly is using corporations to enforce the will of the state until eventually the state withers away and there's nothing left but corporations. And then all the people cease to be citizens and they wind up becoming partners in the corporation. Right? Isn't that exactly what we've got going on here? You know, all these private contractors and all these private lawyers and all of that kind of stuff. The lawyers' fees was the funniest part about the Occupy thing. It's like, look at all this other stuff, you know, private security, $5,000-$6,000, you know, fence hire and damage, stuff like that, $20,000. And then it's like lawyers' fees for two appearances in court, $200,000. Oh my God! What the hell is going on here? This is unbelievable. It's just out of control. How do these people get away with charging this much? Susie, what do you think about them trying to justify the expense? You know, I mean, like a reasonable person wouldn't justify that expense, but a person who's basically exposed in, say, sociopathic, pedophile, Satanist, corporatist scumbaggery, on the other hand, finds it perfectly justifiable. Well, anyway, yeah, I don't think it's justifiable. It's pretty rough, actually, man. You know, people do actually have to understand something about their local government. Is that it's all becoming under the control of a group called ICLEI. Never heard of ICLEI, have you? No, you haven't. Because it's the organization that has a global to local program of implementing a document known as Agenda 21, whose idea is to make sure that all the world is basically strangled of all of its resources, all of its freedom, all of its private property, and live in perpetual enslavement forever in a sustainable way. Sustainable enslavement, ladies and gentlemen, that's what Agenda 21 is. And if you have a look at your local council, they will most likely already, and have had for some time, an office of Agenda 21 or something of that nature. Or if you have a look at what Agenda 21's objective is, what its protocols and what have you, you find it's actually being implemented everywhere in every single sector of society simultaneously, and it has been doing so for quite some time. For example, dumbing down of the population through the education system and the media. Agenda 21! Making private contractors the people who are the ones getting all the money through all the council projects and all the people, right? Agenda 21. It's a straight blueprint model for harvesting an economy. Harvesting and slicing up and destroying and stripping the chaff off of all the wheat. And we are the ones who are about to be reaped. Or something that rhymes nearly with reaped. Anyway, because we now have state asset sales going on. Okay, and what I love is the Prime Minister will come on television, and I'm sure everybody can relate to this. The leader of your country comes on television and says, "Oh, it's the people before us. They got us into monstrous amounts of debt. So I'm just going to get us into even more monstrous amounts of debt in order to get us out of monstrous amounts of debt." Ah! Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, it hurts me. It hurts me in my rib places. Because these people are just so shameless, you know? And I'm pretty shameless. But that's just awful, okay? John Key, the Prime Minister, comes on and starts spewing this crap. He gets this into like $400 million a week. But apparently, we've got a debt problem in this country, and selling our assets, which have a huge rate of return for the government, not to mention a massive reduction in the living costs of the people who actually own that company. It helps to keep them warmer, cheaper all the time, that kind of thing. Those things are the problem. Not the enormous amount of debt that I'm borrowing off of foreign bankers, not the huge quantity of money that I'm taxing out of every single person via their land rates, via their PAYE tax, via their umpteen hundreds of thousands of different PAYE, BS, etc. type crap and scumbaggery. It's all the same game every time. And now... now we know what the game is. We see the scam now. It's like a magician has shown you how to do his trick. And now every time when you see another magician using that exact same trick, you know how it's done and there is no illusion for you. And you can call them out and embarrass them in front of everybody. Oh, yeah. That's sweet. I love calling out politicians in the middle of crowds of people. Susie, you back?
Yes, I am.
Mm-mm-mm.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Can you? Are you able to hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Hi.
Well, we've only got like about 5 minutes or something left. We all self-censor a little bit. So if there's anything that you kind of think is a bit risque that you kind of don't really, you know, you try to steer clear of or anything of that nature because of its very scary implications or because what people might think of you if you said it. You know, this is the place to say it.
To be honest, I'm not scared. I just tell the truth. And that, for me, has been my mantra right throughout Occupy because I just say what I saw and what I know to be true. And if people don't like that, I can't really do anything about their reactions. But I do feel it's really important that there is a testament to the truth that remains on record because, obviously, the MSM record of events is inherently flawed. If I can, just quickly on the John Key thing, just it made me laugh hearing you say what you were just saying about him, because I remember the National Party, while Labor was in power, calling the Helen Clark, you know, this is the nanny state, this is the nanny state. Well, now it's the you're going to have to hire a nanny state because they're trying to send young mums with 12-month-old babies out to non-existent jobs and saying all the kids should be in childcare. And I find it really ironic that they pushed that whole nanny state label for so long, and yet you look at the policies that they're putting into play now and they're just far more damaging and significant than anything the Labor government really came up with.
Well, look at it this way. The difference between National and Labor is with Labor, the people own the police state. And with National, the people rent the police state.
That's very true. It's very true. And on the asset sales front, I mean, these are some of our last utilities in public ownership. Like, pretty much everything this country's ever owned has been flogged off by now. And so it's just astonishing to see the National Party saying on TV, you know, that there's actually an increase in public support for asset sales. Well, I think that the 28th of April on Queen Street in the middle of Auckland City at 3 p.m. from Britomart is really going to prove them wrong because we have people on Hikoi from all over the country marching to Auckland to really raise their voices and let our dissent be heard. Because we do not agree with this. We do not agree with the corporate state. We do not agree with this. It's really the subcontracting state, isn't it? The layers of hierarchy is just astonishing. And the swollen middle management and whatnot. And it's just appalling. But for me, it's really important to protect those assets.
What I really hate is some of these wharfy kind of executives who get paid several hundred thousand dollars for attending six meetings for about like an hour in a year.
Well, I think that's the issue with Doug McKay, the CEO of the council. First of all, why does our council have a CEO, for crying out loud?
The council and the city are a corporation and we're owned by somebody who has shares.
And second of all, the CEO is an unelected official. He's sitting at the helm of what's supposed to be, you know, a civil structure, and yet he is CEO on $750,000 a year. Like, how can we be paying that kind of amount to an unelected official in our council? That doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
Who picked him to be in that top job? Len Brown, because as the Lord Mayor, he has dictatorial power to appoint his whole hand-picked unelected cabinet.
But since when does a mayor need a CEO? I mean, the mayor's supposed to be essentially the CEO, so why is he contracting out his job?
Maybe so we can order more stuff to come out from Manukau City to bust up Occupy. I don't know. It's a good question.
And see, now they're using our last pennies now to try and prosecute some of our occupiers. One of our occupiers, Lynn, who they're currently litigating against, she never broke a single bylaw. She never stayed overnight. She never brought a tent. She never did anything that could justify what's happening to her. In fact, she was a member of our conflict resolution team, which means that she was, to the Occupy, essentially a guidance counsellor. That was the role that she played for us. And yet, lo and behold, here they are spending thousands of our dollars to try and drag her through the courts.
Well, I think that's the best kind of tyranny there is. The one that you rent yourself, you know. Okay, rent a tyranny. I think I might start up a new company. That'd be great. All right. Thank you very much, Susie, for coming on with us. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening. And we'll see you again sometime, assuredly.